I'm Afshin Ratansi, and welcome back to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world from the UAE, which sent a team led by Vice President Sheikh Mansour bin Zayed Al Nahyan to the Trump-Egypt meeting last weekend in what many might conclude, was a bizarre intermission in a genocide. Leaders from NATO nations supplying the weapons for the mass killing in Gaza arrived for photo calls with Donald Trump, who claimed, quote, the war is over. Thousands of Palestinian hostages were released as Israel admitted that their hostages, who had been captured on October the 7th, were actually IDF soldiers. Malnutrition and the slaughter of civilians in Gaza, alas, did not stop. But aerial bombardment from NATO warplanes did stop, as did British spy flights. At the Egypt meeting, Trump acknowledged unusual U.S. weapon support for the genocide and that his principal bankroller, Miriam, widow of Las Vegas casino tycoon Sheldon Adelson, had unelected political power over the American people, and that she might be beholden to Israel rather than the USA. This amidst more questions being raised in the US about the suspected Israeli motives in the assassination of MAGA organizer Charlie Kirk. Palestinians, for their part, were not involved in the drafting of the peace plan. There was zero acknowledgement of the internationally recognized legal right for them to violently resist occupation. Instead, a board of peace is to be established, chaired by Donald Trump himself, who later threatened U.S. disarmament of Palestinians in Gaza. What now for Palestine, then, given international support for the Palestinian cause is at an all-time high? In Ramallah is the Palestinian Authority's Deputy Foreign Minister, Dr. Omar Awadallah. Dr. Awadallah, thanks so much for coming on the show. I better ask just to start with whether you support the Trump 20-point plan. If it's 20 points, it might be 21 or 22 points, but 20-point plan.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Actually, yes, it was at 21 points, but it seems it's changed then and became a 20 points plan. In all cases, yes, we welcome the efforts of Mr. Trump because it was at least the first stage is consistent with our priorities to stop the genocide. As you mentioned that illegally, right? It is a genocide that happened in Gaza. Israel committed genocide. It's committed starvation also, used starvation as a method of war in Gaza. So our priorities were in the first stage.
What was the extra point? What was the extra point? I mean, some people said the 21st point might have been the disarming of Hamas, but then it was complicated by the fact that Trump then said he supported Hamas executions in Gaza as a sign of law and order and strength, and then that was overruled by another element of the U.S. government. What was the 20? You just said 21, and then some people said 20.
Yes, I said it's a 21, but it was reformulated, actually, and redesigned, so you cannot know what mainly the last point that was deleted. But
what do you think it was?
I think something good, because I think there was a lot of criticism of deleting some of the ideas that our Arab and Muslim leaders they accepted too, and it was changed in the last minute after the discussions between Kushner and Witkoff and Netanyahu. So I think there was some criticism that change have happened to that plan. Unfortunately, and adding to what you said, I think extrajudicial killing is illegal and a war crime. It cannot be accepted by anyone in Gaza Strip, whether from the Israelis where they committed genocide against our people, or by anyone.
What if it's an Israeli proxy gang? What if it's an Israeli proxy gang in Gaza that was collaborating in the genocide, giving coordinates to the Israeli Air Force?
I think we need all to commit to law and to abide by law. And if there is a real court and a real accusations, that can be done legally in a very
legal
manner, not in the streets.
I don't think Gaza is in any position for courts. Anyway, let's get back to the plan. Temporary transitional committee chaired by Trump with maybe Tony Blair. Do you think it'll be temporary, this committee? Does it remind you of Sykes-Picot, the whole thing? Because you weren't consulted, the Palestinian Authority is not consulted, and as you said, it was Kushner, his son-in-law, and real estate people, and no Palestinians were involved?
No, I think I was talking about the last-minute discussion, but the discussion between among our Arab and Islamic brothers, leaders that were presented at the meeting with Mr. Trump. We were consulted, and that was part of the commitment and part of the things that we agreed upon in your declaration. So the idea of having a transitional committee, that was also in the Arab Islamic Reconstruction Plan.
Yeah, but in the New York plan, there was a Palestinian state. Well, there's no Palestinian state in this document.
Yes, and the plan of Mr. Trump, there is a lot of things that were absent. International law, link Gaza to West Bank, the Palestinian government and the Palestinian leadership. So many things that were absent in the plan, but that does not mean that they are not there. Because this plan is one of the plans. It's not the plan that will take us or lead us to peace that we saw the gathering in Sharm el-Sheikh. The gathering in Sharm el-Sheikh is speaking about the commitments to peace. That means commitment to New York Declaration and to the international law and the two-state solution. We understand this in that way, not in any kind of another way. So we look at
here Mr. in Dubai, Trump, I know there are differences between the Palestinian Authority and the UAE, but here in the UAE press, it says, Trump, I'll decide on one state or two for the Middle East peace. Is it your understanding it's one state or two states? Because Trump doesn't seem to have a preference at the moment, particularly.
By the way, the root causes is the presence of an illegal occupation that prolonged for 57 years. So first we need to end this occupation and then to think one state, two states, five states, seven states, we need to this occupation to end. So if Mr. Trump is talking about one state where no Israeli occupation, that's great. And if he can manage and bring that, that's very good. And he if thinking about two states where the Palestinian people and Israel living side by side in peace security, by ending the Israeli occupation, by protecting the Palestinian people, by preventing Israel of committing genocide against our people, that's also most
perhaps,
welcome.
Perhaps but Miriam Adelson is the only one who knows.
Is the two-state solution.
Yeah, perhaps Miriam Adelson is the only person who knows what's in Trump's head about that. On the actual summit in Sharm el-Sheikh, why do you think it was that MBS from Saudi Arabia and MBZ from the UAE were not at the summit? I mean, they sent vice presidents there, but why? And of course, MBS called it out as a genocide, and MBZ, I mean, the UAE, as I said, I know Fatah has been critical, and the Palestinian Authority infamously said, Israel's West Bank plans are a red line. No one really knew whether that suggested something about the Abraham Accords. But why do you think neither MBS or MBZ were at such a summit where all these Western European leaders that had supplied the weapons that had killed so many Palestinians, they went there, but not MBS or MBZ?
Actually, I don't know. Maybe it's better to ask our brothers themselves why they were not there. But I think the weight of the Saudi Arabia that we witnessed for the last at least 2 years by bringing the global alliance to implement the two-state solution, by convening a great conference of peaceful settlements of the question of Palestine and having to co-chair a conference between them and France, having that New York declaration with all these commitments and actions, I think that Saudi Arabia, they are playing a very good role. From our brothers in UAE Emirates, I think that when Netanyahu wanted or he thought about annexing the West Bank, we heard of a strong statement about the Abraham Accords that they will not be available on the table anymore. And that, I think, brought some reason to Trump himself to say that there will never be any kind of annexation of the occupied Palestinian territory by Israel. So I think they are playing a very good role and they are committed to the peaceful settlement. They are committed in supporting the Palestinian people and their cause. So we don't know what is the real reason why they were not there. Nonetheless, their representatives were there and respected ones, including His Highness Prince Faisal bin Farhan, the foreign minister that he was, the head of the Arab Islamic Committee that traveled all the capitals in the world, talking about the question of Palestine, accusing Israel of genocide and trying to find solution.
And it's your understanding that it was Recep Tayyip Erdogan that told Trump that Netanyahu's presence could not be tolerated at Sharm el-Sheikh?
I think Netanyahu's presence always should not be tolerated. He's a war criminal.
Well, there were reports that President Sisi of Egypt had agreed to his presence there, which would have been quite something to see on the stage in Sharm el-Sheikh.
The courtesy of the host country and the real thing that happens there, that Netanyahu was not there, and this is the important thing.
I've got to ask, how well is your leader, Mahmoud Abbas? He's 90 years old. He still made it to meet Trump. Is he okay?
I think he's in a good shape. I think we all saw him in Sharm el-Sheikh, and he had that good discussion among the leaders, whether the Turkey or France and UK, the newly recognized the state of Palestine. He stand next to Mr. Trump and he talked to Mr. Trump for more than 5 minutes. I think talking about the next stage, what we need to do actually after the ceasefire and ending the war, that without a political path, clear one, according to New York Declaration, it will be difficult to achieve peace, stability, or security in the region. I think he's good and he's following all the details of the question of Palestine, and he has a good engagement with other leaders all over the world.
Yeah, you said Britain and France. I mean, have they bought space with the Palestinian Authority by recognizing Palestine? And now they can just send more and more weapons to slaughter Palestinian babies, and you'll keep on talking about how Britain and France are great bilateral partners to discuss peace with. Why should France and Britain be involved in anything to do with peace in the Middle East?
I think these two countries are G7 countries, permanent Security Council members of the Security Council of the United Nations members. They were involved in the peace conference. France was a co-chair. UK was also a co-chair of one of the roundtables talking about the future of the Palestine. They recognized Palestine not from a symbolic point of view, but from taking decisions and telling Israel that they cannot do what they are doing against the Palestinian people without consequences. UK took a bold decision against the settlers, including some terrorist ministers. I don't want to say violent ministers within the Netanyahu's government. They prevented them to enter UK. France is taking also bold decisions. We want to improve that, to work on that, and to tell Israel that consequences, sanctions, will be the ramification also of the recognition, because recognition is not a symbolic issue.
Omar Awadallah, I'll stop you there. More from the Palestinian Authority's Deputy Minister of Foreign Affairs after this break. Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with the Palestinian Authority's Deputy Minister of Foreign Affairs, Dr. Omar Awadallah. Thank you, Minister, for telling me in part one about the summit in Egypt per se. But even though Mahmoud Abbas looked reasonably well, a lot of talk about Hussein al-Sheikh taking over at the Palestinian Authority. Will he be taking over at the Palestinian Authority when Mahmoud Abbas dies, who, as I said, was 90 years old, during the transitional committee that is in the 20-point plan?
Actually, you know, in Palestine, and also Mr. Hussein Sheikh, who is the vice president, it was clear that the one who will be the Palestinian leader will be chosen by the Palestinian people themselves in elections. So that was clear.
Well, there are never any elections.
There will be, and we were clear actually in our commitment to the New York conference, including to the letter that His Excellency the President Mahmoud Abbas sent to Mr. Macron and to His Highness Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, talking that we will be having elections after 1 year of the end of the war in Gaza. So we are clear about this. We are committed to that.
Has the war ended?
Continue.
So there'll be elections in a year's time?
Yes. If the war is ended, and we hope that...
Well, Trump says the war ended.
So I think now we can start first to think about the early recovery in Gaza, and to start thinking about all the political path toward the two-state solution, including the issue of democratization of our institutions and elections, including the peaceful path, as I said, that there should be a clear path to peace based on New York Declaration to end the Israeli occupation and having materializing the state of Palestine and the rights of the Palestinian people. So yes, we are looking for elections. Now we have a constitutional committee that was formed for these reasons. We have an electoral committee also for these also reasons, and thinking about changing the laws in Palestine toward having a democratic and transparent election. So the Palestinian leader will be an elected Palestinian leader by the Palestinian people, whether in Gaza, West Bank, including Jerusalem, and maybe our people, refugees that are in diaspora.
Okay. I mean, one of the reasons perhaps why Al-Sheikh will lose will be because he met with Tony Blair in Amman, who's going to be on this transitional committee, and he said our readiness to work with Trump and Mr. Blair. Why does Hussein Al-Sheikh, the vice president of the Palestinian Authority, want to work with a war criminal?
Actually, first of all, there is nothing yet clear about the peace board or the board of peace.
Yeah, but he said that. And quote, our readiness to work with Blair. Why?
I read that. Actually, it is a kind of commitment that we're ready to work with anyone that is ready to help us in ending the war and taking us toward any kind of a peaceful settlement of the question of Palestine. The idea of Mr. Tony Blair as a war criminal, I think that the international community should take him to the jail, not the Palestinian people themselves. But the Palestinian people, I can assure you, if Tony Blair is going to commit any war crime in Palestine, he will be responsible for that. And he will be taken to jail if he's going to do this. So from our side, we are ready. This is a kind of commitment and readiness to work with anyone toward resolving the question of Palestine and to stop the genocide.
Presumably not with Smotrich or Ben-Gavir. But
definitely not.
Well, exactly. So there is a red line for you in terms of people.
Yes,
Where this gets serious is, you see, do you want the dismantling of all the Hamas-run services in Gaza? Do you want that to happen?
We want to dismantle. Actually, we've been saying this for 17 years, that Hamas would not be governing Gaza, because Hamas, they took Gaza in a coup d'etat.
We shouldn't have said it back then, because they were elected back then.
We always say that anyone who should rule Gaza is the legitimate Palestinian government and the PLO as the sole legitimate representative of the Palestinian people.
Hamas were democratically elected. I'm trying to tie this up with Tony Blair, because as you know, Tony Blair, on a pack of lies, invaded Iraq, tens of millions killed, wounded, or displaced. But the first thing they did was have a coalition provisional authority, and they dismantled all the structures there of governance. It seems you, and presumably with Tony Blair, would dismantle all the local governance within Gaza as a first step, giving rise to presumably militias in Gaza.
Actually, we as Palestinian government, we are acting in Gaza and we are providing services, and we are exclusively, by the way, in some sectors in Gaza, like water, energy, education, health, relief, we are there. So talking about dismantling, Hamas accepted Mr. Trump's plan. So they accepted that.
But the Palestinian Authority isn't in Gaza doing health.
We are in Gaza. Who said that we are not
They're doing. They are running water services. And we sewage are, services. It's not Hamas that are running it.
No. We are running all of this. We are still paying salaries to our employees, and they are doing all the job for our people in Gaza. So that's why when we brought the Arab, what's now so called the Arab Islamic plan for reconstruction of Gaza, we were talking about a permanent a transitional committee of technocrats that has to do the business, the services in Gaza by using our infrastructure and to be linked to the central government, that to legitimate central government under the supervision of one of the ministers.
Well, somehow through the barbed fences of the Israeli...
Through?
You're going to somehow link it up through all the different walled areas in between the West Bank and Gaza. I mean, the money obviously is key. How is the 1.6 billion euros going to be paid to the Palestinian authorities as part of the deal? And, I mean, are you expecting that soon? Presumably that is from European players?
They already channeled, actually, this 1.6 billion euros that was sent by the EU is the usual funding and donation to the Palestinian government and to the Palestinian private sector.
Can it be spent on weapons to protect Palestinians from Israeli settlers?
Spent on weapons? And unfortunately, there's nothing can be spent on weapons out of this, because Israel, what Israel is trying to do in the West Bank is undermining the ability of the Palestinian government.
Well, surely it can be spent on police services within the West Bank, right?
Including the police services in the West Bank, and including health and education and infrastructure and all of this. This money is for the sake of governing and providing services for our people in the West Bank, in Gaza Strip for sure.
But it can't explicitly be used to protect Palestinians being killed and harassed constantly by these settlers. You see, the thing is, 72% of Israeli Jews say no Palestinian state should exist. That's Israeli democracy survey. 76% believe no innocent people in Gaza, the Accord Center in Israel. Do you expect a disarmed Gaza to defend Gaza? And a Palestinian Authority, which can't spend any of this money on weapons protecting Palestinians, to be able to defend the West Bank?
I think we were clear about the issue of disarming disarming Gaza or the West Bank, or having a demilitarized state. We took that from the perspective that we need to have, by our invitation and by Security Council resolution, an international stabilization mission or peacekeeping mission that protect us from the Israelis, first from the Israelis, and to support the Palestinian government in the stabilization and in providing security for our people.
Yeah, but would you say Trump, all those UN resolutions?
Only one thing, that we heard the statement by Mr. The President of Egypt, Mr. Abdel Fattah al-Sisi, when he said that we are looking for establishing a zone of free from weapons of mass destruction and nuclear weapons. He was mentioning Israel, by the way. Those who should be disarmed is Israel. Those who still have nuclear weapon without any monitoring by the international agency on atom and nuclear weapons is Israel. So adding to this, the disarming the settlers themselves. This should be linked to disarming the settlers. There is a resolution by Security Council 904. It speaks about the importance and the need to disarm Israeli settlers, because...
Yeah, but Donald Trump is the emperor here, so even more so than UN Security Council resolutions, as I think the Sharm el-Sheikh summit proved. Then at least a lot of the world now sees that the Israelis have been disarmed of their propaganda, because so many people support you and the Palestinian people now. Can I ask you whether the Palestinian Authority raised the release of Marwan Barghouti as part of the release program?
Actually, those who were involved in the discussion of releasing our hostages and our prisoners was our brothers, the mediators, and including that all the list from our commission for detainees and prisoners.
Was Marwan Barghouti on that list?
And definitely, for sure. And we heard some speculations that there is some attempts that no one wants Mr. Marwan Barghouti to come out, and we use some pressure. Do you think that Israelis will accept or hear anyone from Tabriz. We've been asking the Israelis to stop their killing since the beginning of this genocide. We were talking to the Israelis, asking them to release our money from the international community. Did they do that? So are they going to hear from anyone here that don't release Marwan or Abdullah?
So it wasn't the Palestinian Authority that stopped his release, the so-called...
Something is unacceptable, actually.
The so-called Nelson Mandela of the Palestinians.
Marwan Barghouti is a leader, Palestinian leader. Me, myself, I'm not Fatah, but he is a leader. So he should be on the top of the list of those who should be released in that list.
And just finally, I'm speaking to you from Dubai. Do you still want the UAE to exit the Abraham Accords?
Actually, our brothers in Emirates, they said that they are using this Abraham Accords and their relationship with Israel to prevent them from doing anything wrong, illegal, and something that they can use. I think in a way or another, they used that when Netanyahu wanted to annex the West Bank. And for us, I think if the Abraham Accords will bring the end of the Israeli occupation and to prevent Israel from committing genocide against our people, we said it. According to the Arab Peace Initiative, all countries in the Arab world and Islamic world will join these efforts, but Israel should abide by international law and giving the Palestinian people their rights, including their right to self-determination.
Dr. Omar Awadallah, thank you.
Thank you.
That's it for the show. Our continued condolences to those bereaved by the UK-US EU armed genocide across Palestine. We'll be back on Monday with the former director of the UN Human Rights Office in New York, who resigned over the UN's conduct during the Gaza genocide. Until then, keep in touch via all our social media if it's not censored in your country, and head to our channel, Going Underground TV, on rumble.com to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you Monday.